From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll hear the beginning of Commodity Week. And if you can stay with us the whole hour, the whole of the program, otherwise you can hear it online at willag.org. Our guests this week included Matt Bennett, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and from ADM Investor Services, Steve Fried. And as we close out our time together in the first half hour, we'll discuss the weather forecast to that with Eric Snodgrass, and he'll have a special look at Monday's solar eclipse weather. That happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Let's check now what's happened in Chicago with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Todd, happy Friday. Happy pre-eclipse Monday to you, Todd.
Absolutely. Should be a fantastic day. Everybody in the United States, or many people in the United States, will see the solar eclipse sometime between, in our area, around 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as long as the clouds don't cover things up. And I already talked to Eric Snodgrass a little bit about that. We'll hear more from him a bit later in the program. But let's turn our attention to what happened in Chicago for this Friday. Another up day for the soybeans. Not too bad.
Not bad. A good way to finish the week. We did not get above that, quote, magical 940 level that you and I have been talking about, that weekly support resistance level that's so critical right now, and still below the 200-month moving average as well as a result of that. So we've had some dry weather this week. We've had some really good export demand this week in the beans. And we've also had, I think, another crushing blow to the wheat market in the aftermath of the August crop report. And then you throw on top of that an improvement in the corn crop conditions, and it was relatively easy for the soybeans to find the best close on the week. Beans for the November going to be down about 7, Dease corn down about 9.75, Dease wheat down over 25 cents. And interesting to note, you look at the week and then you look at where we were last year at this time in mid-August, Todd, in lead month futures, we're down about a dime in the wheat market from a year ago, down about 90 cents in the soybeans, but up about 17 cents in the corn. So this is probably where we need to focus going into next week, if you ask me.
And why would you focus there?
Well, you've had 7 weeks in a row down in the wheat. The last time we did that was when we came off our 735 high back in 2014. It's hard to get 8 weeks in a row down. So cyclically, there is a very strong chance, if history is any way to look at things, and I have to be careful about the compliance and disclaimers and whatnot, but that's kind of how I'm looking at it right now, is that it's taken 3.5 years to do this since the last time we did it. Plus, we've now got the soft red wheat down about $15 a ton from the Ukrainian Black Sea price, and over $20 a ton cheaper than the French price, and that's at our U.S. Gulf for the soft red wheat. And believe it or not, hard red wheat is now back to discount the soft red wheat. So there is no protein premium being priced in on the futures market. I don't think that will last very long. So several things make me think the wheat market has some better look to it next week.
And if that is the case, will that lift corn and beans along with it? And I suppose beans are being driven by lack of rainfall in part across parts of Iowa, even Illinois.
Absolutely right. I think it will. I think the Pro Farmer Tour is probably leaning towards the corn bulls at this point because of some of the other private tours that came out, especially in Illinois this week. And so, yeah, if we could get the wheat underneath us, technically spring wheat leading the market, I think the corn would willingly join, at least until we know a lot more about the Pro Farmer Tour. And then, as you say, that leaves the beans probably not going to fight those other two markets, especially if the rain is not as heavy as some of the models predict.
I'm going to ask you to look at this in a couple of ways. So if we were normal the rest of the way out, and or if you're correct in what we've been talking about so far, where does the bottom for harvest season come? Does it come, if we're normal, later in September, October, and sooner, if you're right, as we've been discussing the last couple of minutes?
Yes, that's right. The wheat puts the bottom in earlier if it happens right now. If it doesn't do that and the wheat continues to languish, then we'll probably see the beans get the weakest because we probably got the rainfall, and then we have to go into this traditional seasonal that we've had to deal with several years almost in a row, where it takes all the month of September and part of October to carve a low out, and then maybe we get a bump to be able to encourage some farmer selling at the end of the year or first of next year.
So what are the other things you've been watching at this time on the macro side or in the exports, other issues that you've been worried about or trying to really delve into?
Yeah, good question. I mean, there's a lot going on the macro side. I think first and foremost is NAFTA and North Korea. We're not done there yet. In fact, we're just getting into the heart of the negotiations in NAFTA, and we really haven't settled anything with China and their help or not help in the negotiations with North Korea. So I think this is a major feature to the market that's going to be with us at least through next week. The origin of label issues being taken up in the NAFTA negotiations, the dispute settlement, I think it's Chapter 19 or Rule 19. These are the two of the biggest point of contentions between the three countries. And so I don't think we will be able to walk away from NAFTA influencing our markets next week. And I think that's some of the reason why the hog market finally found a top in the short term here, at least. And that's probably a big deal. The other thing I do like, though, Todd, is the fact that we continue to see the crude oil supplies go down. That should help inflationary bias as we get closer to harvest.
Anything else that we ought to discuss before I let you go for the day?
I think the only other thing I would throw out is we still have bean exports for 16-17 with only 2 weeks left, still running 5% higher than what USDA pegged just a week or so ago. Watch the bull spread next week in the soybeans. Watch to see if the September can't find some support for the November and the bull spread start to work in our favor for a change.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Suzalo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Well, it's been a pretty rough week for the administration in Washington, D.C. However, there are some things that can be highlighted in agriculture. For the first time in 2.5 decades, U.S. pork will soon be able to be exported to Argentina, a move that opens a potentially $10 million market annually for domestic producers. Argentina hasn't been high on the U.S. pork producers list. It's just $10 million, and that's kind of a drop in the bucket for the industry, which is nearly $6 billion large in exports, and that was as of last year, but they still say it feels pretty good to get a win. The announcement follows Vice President Mike Pence's visit this week with Macri, the president of Argentina, who is on a multi-nation tour of South America. Apparently, Donald Trump raised the pork issue with Macri during a White House meeting on April the 27th. The White House also gave Robert Lighthizer, the trade representative, and U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, along with Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, credit for sealing the deal. Now, Pence offered further praise to Donald Trump, whose leadership has led to new trade deals, he said. Pence cited an agreement announced earlier this week in Colombia, which allows the U.S. import of Colombian Hass avocados in exchange for measures that should increase American rice exports to that country. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but shift a little further to the north and talk about NAFTA. Officials from Mexico, Canada, and the United States may not have yet wrapped up their opening round of talks to renegotiate NAFTA, but the next two are being planned. Negotiators are expected to head to Mexico City September 1 through 5 and to Canada for the third round September 23 to 27. Seems a specific location for the Canadian round has not yet been set, but if it holds the pattern of the first two, held in Washington, D.C. and Mexico City, it looks probable it will be held in Ottawa. And while officials have publicly said they're working toward a soft deadline of later this year or early next, they have privately been much more firm on the idea of talks concluding by December for NAFTA. To that end, senior officials have also requested that all texts be presented by the end of September, giving all three parties sufficient time to review each other's proposals and move more quickly toward a final agreement. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. This is the closing market report for a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about this recent cooler pattern that we've had. This is something I've asked each of the meteorologists all week long. There's been a whole lot of rumbling throughout the industry about the cool August and what that might mean for September.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the Corn Belt on the whole, we've been anywhere between 4 to even 8 degrees cooler than average for the first 18 days of this month. And we've talked at length about why, you know, what the jet system, but I think what's important to talk about here is that, you know, even though it's been dry in some pockets of Illinois, some parts of Iowa, and even getting over to Indiana and Ohio, the good thing for our bean crop is that this cooler weather has taken one stressor away from the beans, and that is we don't have the heat. That slows the evaporation rate and allows that plant to kind of delay going into wilt. But a lot of folks have been asking me some great questions about, does this have any relationship with early frost? And so I dug up some data, and just I want to let everybody know that the relationship, you know, the correlation between cool and early August and an early frost is zero. So this isn't a forecasting tool that we use. Like if it's cool now, it's going to be cool later. Those things are separate. But I did dig up some fun data I want to share with you. Our average frost date here in Champaign, according to this weather station that's been in operation in Urbana since the year 1900, the average date is October 19th. The Illinois State Water Survey would tell you somewhere around October 15th to the 19th. So that's right in that ballpark. Now, for that particular weather station, the earliest ever frost that's ever hit that weather station was on September 16th, and that was in 1916. But I wanted to see, well, when was the last time we had a frost in September in Urbana? And it was 1995. Before that, you have to go back to 1942. And the latest frost we've ever had was on November 13th, 1975. And we almost broke that record last year when our first frost didn't occur in 2016 until November 12th. So when we just think about, you know, the longer term patterns and the cooler weather, my point is that we need to be on the lookout for other features that might potentially drive us into a frost, not the cooler weather we've experienced at the beginning of the month. So let's talk about some of those other features real quick. Right now, we're watching for today some storms that might blow up in western Illinois, certainly going to hit parts of Iowa and Missouri. But some of those storms might actually get into the north central part of the state, which would be great. I would give it a kind of a low probability of getting all the way over here to east central Illinois, maybe 40% chance or less of that. But we desperately need this rain. Now, this rain is coming through ahead of a shortwave trough in the flow of the jet stream. And after it passes through, we have a chance for really allowing our temperatures to rebound. So we're going to see maybe mid to upper 80s, possibly even a 90 degree temperature on Saturday and Sunday. But then we're watching for our next chance of rain coming through at the following trough on Monday night into Tuesday morning. So we have a couple of chances at getting some rain. But I think what everybody wants to know about is what's all this going to look like with respect to the timing of that solar eclipse. So let's talk about that for Monday. So here's the big picture for Monday. There is a system, a weather system, a low pressure system to our west. It'll be somewhere in Nebraska at that point. And what I'm concerned about is we're going to have some southerly flow ahead of that. And that's going to be bringing in the chance for us to get some kind of what we call a cumulus cloud field. Now, some of the longer range model forecasts are hinting at there also being what we call an upper level cirrus shield. That's some wispy clouds in the upper part of the atmosphere. And if those are there, that could impact the viewing of this eclipse. So I wish I could tell you it's going to be perfectly clear. Right now, I'm saying that there's a chance for us to see some cloud cover that may, you know, during that total like 2 hour time period where we'll be able to watch the eclipse, we may see some clouds that could possibly block a few things out. So, you know, that's certainly what's going on in the short term right now.
And finally, before I let you go, we always try to check in on the tropics about this time of the year to see what might be happening with the way of depressions there that could come in as a hurricane eventually into the U.S. coastlines.
Yeah, well, right now we're watching two systems very closely. The front runner, which is now Tropical Storm Harvey, looks as though it's going to get into the Caribbean and then go straight into the Yucatan Peninsula and eventually hit Mexico. So that one's not that big of a threat toward the U.S. at this point. What I'm concerned about is a system that's behind Harvey, not yet named. It's a tropical depression. We're watching that particular system as it moves north of like Puerto Rico into the Bahamas. And just to kind of give you an idea on that track, that's the same track at almost the same time of year that Hurricane Andrew followed back in 1992. There's a big difference. Right now, there's not strong forecast guidance to say that this system could get nearly as strong as that. But this could be our first big player for Florida. And you just got to watch this area because right now the tropics are really boiling. And I'm talking temperatures in those sea surfaces down there in the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, West Atlantic are very warm, which means any would-be system that gets into that area between now and November has the potential to bring quite a bit of moisture into the Corn Belt if the steering winds allow it. So I'm just telling you that every day I'm staring at the tropics as a potential source for some problems for us later on this season. So that's about all that I'm looking at there right now, though. If you're in Florida listening to this, be on the lookout for the next 5 to 8 years. So there you go.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric. We'll talk to you again in 1 week.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.